All right, so welcome to the deep dive, and today we're going to get into something a little different. We're calling this one Think and Act Locally.
Oh.
And it's all about, like, okay, we've done a lot of these deep dives. We've talked to all these really interesting people, read their books, pulled out all this interesting information.
Yeah.
But how can we, as listeners, are we as the people putting the show together, how can we take this information and make it actionable?
Right.
You know, what can we actually do with this?
Yeah, and I think one of the coolest things is that a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today, it's not like high-level federal government, you know, policy stuff.
Right.
It's stuff that you can actually do something about, like, right in your own community. Like,
yes.
I mean, we're going to be talking about things today from drug policy to banking crises to sweatshops to gun control. It's stuff that you can actually, like, go out and do something about.
And some of the stuff we found, too, is pretty surprising. Like, we're going to talk about Judge Jim Gray, who wrote a book, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed.
Right.
And what we can do about it.
Right.
And in Holland, when they decriminalized all drugs, problem drug usage went down 50%.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think that really highlights the fact that a lot of the ways that we think about these problems, like the conventional wisdom, isn't always right.
Right.
And there's a lot of evidence out there that points to different ways of approaching these challenges.
Absolutely. And before we jump into all of that, I did want to remind everybody that if you like what we're doing here, we would really appreciate your support. So if you go to our website, thinkandactlocally.com/donate, it's also in the show notes. You can help us out and, you know, keep this thing rolling.
Awesome.
So why don't we jump right into it with Judge Jim Gray's book on drug policy?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So, I mean, one of the things that Judge Gray really emphasizes in his book is just the incredible human and financial cost of the war on drugs. And he makes the argument that this policy has really failed.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that really connects to what we're talking about with Think and Act Locally, because you can see the effects of the war on drugs right in your own community.
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. How is the drug war impacting your community right now?
Right.
I mean, what kind of resources are being spent
exactly
on, you know, law enforcement incarceration?
Yeah. Is it actually making your community safer?
Right. Yeah.
You know, are there alternatives that people are talking about maybe at the city council level or at the state level?
Right. Yeah.
You know, these are things that you can actually have an impact on.
Yeah. And one of the things I found really interesting in his book is the example of Holland. And when they decriminalized all drugs, there was a 50% reduction in problem drug usage.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, it's not to say that that's the solution for everywhere in every community.
Right.
But it's a very interesting approach.
Absolutely. And I think what's really important about that example is that it really shifted the focus away from treating drug addiction as a criminal issue and more as a public health issue.
Okay.
So it's about getting people the help they need rather than just throwing them in jail.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's switch gears here a little bit and talk about finance with Charles Calamaris, who wrote this book, Fragile by Design, The Political Origins of Banking Crises and Scarce Credit.
Yeah.
And the thing that I found surprising in here is that the U.S. actually has a lot more banking crises than Canada, and they have very similar, you know, economic structures.
Yeah, right.
So why would that be?
Well, and what Calamaris argues in his book is that these banking crises are often tied to what he calls populist policies.
Okay.
And these are policies that, you know, they're often meant to help people,
right?
But they actually end up encouraging banks to make risky loans.
Okay.
So, for example, you might have a policy that says that banks have to lend to people, even if they don't have a very good credit history, or they might not be able to repay the loan.
Right.
And this can lead to a situation where banks are taking on too much risk.
Right.
And then when things go bad, the whole system can collapse.
So how does that apply to somebody in their local area?
Well, I mean, think about it. What are the banks in your community doing?
Right.
Are they engaging in these kinds of risky practices?
Yeah.
Are they taking on too much debt?
Right.
Are they lending to people who might not be able to repay?
Mm.
And, you know, as citizens, we actually have a responsibility to hold our local institutions accountable.
Right.
So we can start by just being more informed about where we bank and what kinds of lending practices they engage in.
That's right. And he had this one stat in here that just blew me away.
Yeah.
Between 1992 and 2007, there was $2.5 trillion in directed credit linked to bank mergers.
It's an astronomical number.
I mean, it's just an insane amount of money.
It is. And it just shows you the scale of political influence in the financial system. I mean, that's a lot of money sloshing around.
It really is. All right. So now let's get into a bit of a controversial one.
Okay.
Here, sweatshops.
All right.
Benjamin Powell wrote a book called Out of Poverty, Sweatshops in the Global Economy. Mm. And, you know, we hear all the time about how bad sweatshops are.
Right.
But his research actually found that in many cases, sweatshops provide better wages and working conditions than other alternatives in these countries.
It does seem counterintuitive, right?
It really does.
You would think, sweatshops are just these horrible places where people are being exploited.
Right.
But the reality is that a lot of these jobs, while they're certainly not easy, they represent a significant step up for workers who are trying to escape extreme poverty.
Right. And it makes you think about, as a consumer here, how do my choices affect these people?
Yeah.
Is there anything I can do to, shop more ethically or, affect this in any way?
Yeah. And that's a great question. And I think that, while it can feel like our individual choices don't really make a difference, the reality is that consumer demand can drive change.
Yeah.
So when we choose to support companies that have ethical production practices, we're sending a message to the market that we value fair labor practices.
Yeah. And I like how you use the example of Lowell and Haverhill in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
These were places that were, sweatshop centers back in the day.
Right.
But then they eventually developed into prosperous, thriving areas.
Exactly.
It shows that, economic development is a process.
Right.
And what might seem like exploitation in the short term might actually be a stepping stone to something better in the long term.
Yeah. It's a powerful reminder that we need to look at the bigger picture and think about the long-term consequences of policies.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's move on to another hot button issue here.
Okay.
Gun control.
All right.
John Lott and Larry Pratt. They both have very different takes on this.
They do.
And I think it's important to get both sides of this because, there's so much rhetoric out there.
Absolutely.
We really need to look at the data
and
see, what's actually going on.
Absolutely. So John Lott's research has shown that right to carry laws, which basically make it easier for people to legally carry concealed weapons, often actually lead to a decrease in violent crime.
Interesting.
Which is kind of counterintuitive to what a lot of people think, right?
Oh.
You would think that more guns would equal more crime, but
more guns equals more crime, right?
But his research shows that that's not necessarily the case.
Interesting. And Larry Pratt also brought up a statistic that just kind of floored me a little bit.
Okay.
Only 40 out of 11 million concealed carry permit holders have misused their weapons.
Wow.
That's a pretty small percentage.
It is, yeah. That's a very tiny fraction.
So it's not to say that gun violence isn't a problem.
Right, of course.
But it does challenge the idea that, more guns automatically equals more crime.
Exactly. And I think that that really highlights the need to just look at the evidence, right, and not just get caught up in the emotional arguments on either side.
Right. So this is a really good time for you as a listener to think about, what are the gun control laws in my community?
Mm-hmm.
How do they make me feel? Do they make me feel safer? Or do I feel like things could be done differently?
Are there things that you could do
to
get involved in the discussion in your community?
Yes.
Whether it's, contacting your local representatives or attending city council meetings or, just talking to your neighbors about it.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about education.
Okay.
James Tooley.
Okay.
He wrote this book, The Beautiful Tree. A personal journey into how the world's poorest people are educating themselves.
Okay.
And he's done a lot of research on these low-cost private schools for the poor in developing countries.
And what did he find?
Well, one of the most surprising things that he found is that these private schools are actually more effective than government schools, even though they have way fewer resources.
Wow.
It's really interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the think and act locally.
Yeah.
Could something like this work in our communities?
Right.
Like, what if we had more parent-led schools or more community-based education initiatives?
Yeah. Like, what if we had more, alternatives to traditional public schools that were really driven by parents in the community?
Yeah. And I think one of the things that Tooley really highlights in his book is that parents, even in the poorest communities,
right,
they have this natural instinct to want to provide their kids with a good education.
Right.
And these private schools are really tapping into that.
Yeah.
You know, they're responding to a need that's not always being met by the government schools.
Right.
So it's not about saying that all government schools are bad.
Right.
It's just saying that, you know, maybe there are other ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's get a little philosophical here.
Yeah.
Michael Humer wrote, "The Problem of Political Authority, an Examination of the Right to Coerce and the Duty to Obey."
Mm-hmm.
And he had this really interesting argument about government power.
Okay.
He said that giving the government more power could actually lead to more violence.
That's interesting.
And a lack of accountability.
Okay, so what's his reasoning there?
Well, he basically says that government officials aren't any more moral or competent
right.
than anybody else.
I mean, they're just people, right?
Right. So if you give them more power, they're more likely to abuse it.
Okay, that makes sense.
And because they have so much power,
right,
it's hard to hold them accountable.
So it's harder to, you know, vote them out of office or to, you know, protest against their policies because they have all the power.
Yeah. And it made me think about, you know, where in my life does the government actually do more harm than good?
That's a great question.
You know, are there things that maybe would be better handled by private citizens or local communities?
Yeah, I think that's the key question here, right? It's not about being anti-government.
Right.
It's about thinking critically about what the role of government should be.
Right. And he made this point about voting, too.
Okay.
That I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, your vote has such a small chance of actually changing anything.
Yeah.
That it leads to political apathy.
Right. Like, why bother voting if it's not going to make a difference?
Right. And that's where this whole think and act locally comes in.
Exactly.
Because you know your actions at the local level actually can make a difference.
So get involved in your community.
Yeah.
Attend city council meetings.
Right.
Contact your local representatives.
Okay. Let's switch gears again here.
All right.
Talk about energy policy.
Okay.
Robert Bryce, he wrote, "Smaller, faster, lighter, denser, cheaper. How innovation keeps proving the catastrophists wrong."
Okay.
And Alex Epstein wrote, "The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels."
Oh, right.
And they kind of have opposite takes on this.
Yeah.
So Bryce is really pro-fossil fuels.
Okay.
He says that they're the most reliable and affordable way to meet the world's energy needs.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that, you know, renewables just aren't there yet.
Yeah. I mean, they have their limitations right now.
Yeah, they do.
Like solar and wind are great.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not always reliable.
Right. You can't always count on the sun shining or the wind blowing.
Exactly.
And he's worried that, you know, if we move away from fossil fuels too quickly, it's going to hurt the economy.
Yeah.
And it can even hurt people.
Right. Because energy is essential for everything we do.
Right.
I mean, it's how we heat our homes. It's how we power our businesses.
It's how we travel.
It's everything.
So what's Epstein's take?
Well, Epstein is interesting.
Okay.
He makes what he calls the moral case for fossil fuel.
Okay.
And he argues that we shouldn't just focus on reducing our environmental impact.
Right.
We should also focus on human flourishing.
Okay. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, he's saying that, you know, sometimes when we focus too much on, like, reducing carbon emissions, we end up with policies that actually hurt people.
Okay.
Like, for example, if we make energy too expensive, then poor people might not be able to afford to heat their homes in the winter.
Yeah.
So he's arguing that we need to find a balance between protecting the environment and making sure that people have access to affordable and reliable energy.
So how do we take all of this and think about it locally?
Well, I mean, I think it starts with just being aware of where our energy comes from.
Okay.
So, you know, what are the energy sources that are being used in your community?
Right.
What are the costs and benefits of each source?
Yeah. Are there ways to support renewable energy projects?
Exactly.
At the local level?
Mm-hmm.
Can we reduce our own energy consumption?
Yeah. I mean, all of these things are things that we can do.
Right.
Right. In our own communities.
All right. So one last topic here.
Okay.
Foreign aid.
All right.
A lot of people think foreign aid is the solution to global poverty.
The idea is that, you know, if we just give enough money to poor countries, they'll be able to develop and pull themselves out of poverty.
Right.
But Chris Coyne, who wrote Doing Bad by Doing Good, Why Humanitarian Action Fails, he argues that it's actually not that simple.
Okay.
Foreign aid can actually do more harm than good in a lot of cases.
Really? How so?
Well, for one thing, it can prop up corrupt governments.
Okay.
If a government knows that it's going to get a bunch of money from foreign aid,
Right.
it doesn't have as much incentive to actually be accountable to its citizens.
Right.
It can also distort local markets. If
Okay.
you're flooding a country with free food or other goods,
Right.
it can actually undercut local businesses and farmers.
That makes sense.
And then it can also create a cycle of dependency. If people become reliant on foreign aid,
Right.
they're less likely to try to develop their own businesses or create their own solutions.
So what's the alternative?
Well, Coyne argues that instead of just giving handouts,
Right.
we should focus on creating the conditions for economic growth.
Okay.
So things like promoting free trade, protecting property rights, encouraging entrepreneurship.
So I guess that makes me think about, those organizations in my community that are doing foreign aid.
Yeah. Are they actually making a positive impact?
Right.
Or are they contributing to these problems?
Right.
And are there ways that we can support initiatives that are actually empowering people to improve their own lives?
Yeah. Okay. Last one. I promise this one's going to be a little out there.
Right.
Okay. So what if we lived in a world without government?
A world without government.
I
Okay.
know it sounds crazy, but Robert Murphy, he wrote Chaos Theory, two essays on market anarchy,
Okay.
and he's an anarcho-capitalist.
So he believes that we don't need government at all.
Very interesting.
So he thinks that law and security could actually function without the state.
Okay, so how would that work?
Well, he says we'd have these private courts.
Prior to
Yeah,
courts.
like competing courts
Got it.
and arbitration services.
Right.
And they would provide more efficient and just a dispute resolution.
Okay. I mean, I guess that makes sense in a way
Right.
because they would have to compete for customers.
Right.
So they'd have to be good at what they do.
Right.
Otherwise, people would just go to a different court.
And he says the same thing about security.
Okay.
We'd have private security firms,
Like instead of police.
right, and insurance companies,
Okay.
and they would be responsible for protecting people.
Interesting.
So it's like a free market for law and order.
It's a very different way of thinking about things.
It really is. And I know it sounds far-fetched,
Yeah.
but I think it's a really good thought experiment.
I agree.
It makes us think about, what are the possibilities?
Could we actually apply some of these principles to our local communities?
Yeah, like what about things like crime prevention
Right.
or dispute resolution
Right.
or even just community safety?
Yeah. Are there ways that we can use private solutions or market-based
Yeah,
approaches
right.
to make our communities better?
That's a great question, and I think it's one that's worth exploring. It really is, and it makes you think, are there ways that we can kind of rethink some of these things
Yeah.
and come up with new solutions?
Yeah, and it all comes back to that idea of, thinking locally
Right.
and acting locally.
Absolutely.
So we've covered a lot of ground today.
We have.
Everything from drug policy to a world without government.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is. But I think that's kind of the point of these deep dives, is
Yeah.
to, get you thinking.
To challenge our assumptions and
Right.
to explore new ideas.
And what's really cool is that, even though these issues seem really big and complex,
Right.
a lot of times the solutions start at the local level.
Absolutely.
So, as you're going about your day today, just think about, how can I apply some of these things that I've learned
Yeah.
to my own life, to my own community?
Right.
Maybe it's, being more mindful of your purchasing choices or getting involved in local politics or even just having conversations with your friends and family
Absolutely.
about these issues.
Yeah, because every little bit counts, right?
Exactly. And, change starts at the local level.
It
It
does.
starts with each of us, taking responsibility for our communities.
And working together.
Exactly. So I want to leave you with one final thought here.
Okay.
We talked about how private solutions can work in areas like law enforcement and education,
Right.
but what other possibilities are we overlooking?
Yeah.
What if we applied these principles to other areas of our lives,
Like what?
like healthcare or transportation or environmental protection?
That's a great question.
So I think that's something for everyone to think about
Yeah.
as we kind of wrap things up here. So this has been our Think and Act Locally edition of the Deep Dive.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed it. And remember to check out the show notes for links to all the sources we discussed. And if you like what we're doing here,
Yeah.
please consider making a donation on our website, thinkandactlocally.com/TEDTalkTom.
It really helps us out.
It really does. The link is in the show notes.
Awesome.
And until next time, keep thinking, keep acting.
Keep it local.
And keep making a difference right where you live.